Portland City Council will come to order. Carla, please call the roll.
Adams?
Here.
Leonard?
Here.
Saltzman?
Here.
Sten?
Here.
Potter?
Here.
I'd like to remind folks that prior to offering public testimony to City Council, a lobbyist must declare which entity he or she is authorized to represent. We have a large number of people both signed up to testify as well as invited testifiers. So we ask people that if you hear something that someone else has said, we will not compel you to repeat the same thing. And that if you hear something that you like, the way we express that is by waving the hands like that. That keeps the noise down so we can continue with the presentations and the testimony. So with that, and also when we get to testifying, is that the individual testifiers will be limited to 2 minutes. With that, I'll turn it over to Commissioner Adams.
I should read the item first.
Oh, I guess so.
385, adopt the West Burnside Cooch Alternatives Report and direct the Office of Transportation to begin preliminary engineering and implementation of the recommended alternative for transportation and streetscape improvements to the West Burnside and Cooch Streets corridor outlined in the preferred project alternative, the Burnside-Cooch Street Couplet.
Mr. Adams.
Thank you, Mayor, Council. First off, I have friends on both sides, or all sides of this issue, and I want to thank many of you faces I know have been involved over the past 2 years that I've had this project in various meetings, both large and small town halls that we've held. And I want to thank you, no matter what your views are in this process, for your engagement. And I believe that reasonable people can disagree. And I look forward to the debate today.
Excuse me, Commissioner, but children, if you would step back from the edge there, I would really appreciate it. It makes me nervous to see you so close to the very edge. Thank you very much. Please continue.
Thanks, Mayor. When I inherited this project as Transportation Commissioner, I had a vision and some specific goals for it. I wanted it to be the best possible project, both environmentally, financially, and for transit and for safety. And when I inherited the project, the existing council policy was for a Burnside-Cooch couplet. That is the policy on the books today. But as chief of staff to the mayor at Katz at the time, who was not the transportation commissioner, I really didn't have that much to do with the project prior to getting appointed as transportation commissioner. And I wasn't convinced necessarily that all the options had been thoroughly examined in the process that had been completed up to that point. So many of you were at that first town hall that I had where I let everyone pro and con sort of take a whack at the project, to put their questions on the table, to express their concerns and their hopes, the reasons why some of you at that time wanted the couplet as proposed, as approved by the City Council, to go forward. In the end, what came out of the process, the review of about 15 months, was a recommendation for the couplet combined with the streetcar from 2nd Avenue to Northwest 24th, with from Northwest 19th to 24th, going back from the couplet into two lanes either direction. This was the a version of the preliminary vision that was outlined by the community. And I want to go through the review of the problems. We have some invited testimony here, and then we'll turn it over to public testimony. Joined in my presentation is Roland Chapowski, my senior policy director for transportation. So let's hit the...
Okay.
Next slide.
Yeah.
So these are some of the vision points. We have to rebuild the street. It's a broken street, which is a minimum of $20 million cost. As part of that, 5-6 years ago, PDOT sat down with the neighborhoods, as you're going to hear, and asked them, as we rebuild the street, what other issues do you want to accomplish? Part of the vision was to capture that once-in-a-generation opportunity, because it isn't just a matter of repaving. We have to dig deep, dig out the street, the underlayment, and replace it. I wanted to create one of the safest streets in Portland. I wanted to unlock the hidden value that had been suppressed on long real estate, along Burnside and Cooch. I wanted to put into a single street all the green street technology and pilot projects that we have been working on and that the Bureau of Environmental Services has been working on long before I was assigned to be Transportation and Environmental Services Commissioner. And meaning there is the opportunity to handle all this stormwater on site. I wanted to redo this street in a way that reduced our reliance on the car, that reduced our reliance on oil. We just recently passed a peak oil resolution, and to reduce the pollution caused by this street, or at least make it no worse. Establish the image of Burnside as a green meridian for Portland. It is one of the meridians for Portland. The opportunity to expand the transit system and to create public places and plaza where possible. The problems of Burnside are well known and well documented. It's dangerous for pedestrians. It has long pedestrian crossings, excessive vehicle speeds, inadequate in terms of safe crossings. The three most dangerous streets in the city of Portland are 122nd Avenue, 82nd Avenue, and Burnside. And they are very similar in terms of their characteristics: heavy traffic, fast traffic, and wide. Burnside is in poor repair. Mentioned that needs to be rebuilt. The other problem is it's considered unattractive and unpleasant and serves as a barrier north and south. It also has narrow sidewalks, crowded bus stops. We heard back from property owners, developers, and merchants that it discourages economic activity, lacking in parking, challenging retail environment. Again, that barrier north and south. There has been little investment on the street. Investment that did go into the street turns its back on Burnside. There are no left turns or few left turns and fails to provide adequate access. And Burnside is a highly polluting street in terms of the congestion and idling that it creates, the unnecessary air pollution, and the stormwater that goes directly into the combined sewer system. In terms of funding, we had some initial principles for funding the project, that the city should assume the cost of the basic repair for the street. And for basic safety improvements, that seemed to be a fair burden of cost for city gas taxpayers to pay for. That enhancements beyond the basic street repair, though, would have to be paid for with other sources that did not take away from other projects in the city. And that the project should be done in a way that maximizes the overall return on investment and would be eligible for federal funding and would incent and realize as much private redevelopment to help complete and pay for the project as possible. The potential funding sources for this project are development agreements, federal highway funds. The Federal Transit Administration Small Starts programs now pays for 50% of approved projects. Our project on the east side, the Portland Loop, was just recently forwarded to Congress from the FTA with approval for $75 million, which is estimated to be 50% of that project's cost. Federal earmarks, the preliminary decision that the council has made to move forward with engineering on the east side couplet, 35% engineering. Some of that work is being paid for, or contemplated being paid for, with federal earmarks, which are congressional-sponsored resources. System development charges, where development occurs, there are charges called system development charges that could be applied to this project. There are significant redevelopment opportunities along Burnside and Cooch that you're going to hear about. Tax increment financing, this has been in as a budget, as a line item approved by local tax increment districts. Doing something about Burnside has been in the River District tax increment district plan for a while. General gas tax revenue to pay for the basic work, energy tax credits depending on what we choose to do, local improvement districts, which are assessments against property in a district that can be a boundary drawn by council, and the new on-street parking meter revenue that does not now exist. Those are some of the funding opportunities when looking at this particular issue. In terms of project costs?
Right now, we have a project cost estimate of about $41 million for the street repairs. As Sam has mentioned, you're talking at least in the vicinity of $20 million for just the basic rebuild and of the street. When you talk about basic sidewalk widenings, which almost all the plans that try to address, you put on a little bit of more cost. The streetcar right now is estimated to be an additional $39 million. Again, all of these estimates are low confidence, and we're going to firm those up, hopefully, with 35% preliminary engineering. Just to give you a little bit of an idea as to sort of how this project compares with the other ones, the other project that has been seriously considered, and we've had about 11 viewed at in total, but we've whittled them down. The last ones were the Burnside-only improvements, enhanced existing, and the Burnside-Cooch alternative. In your supplementary materials that we just provided you today in the three-ring binder, you can see the estimate of the different the cost estimates of the different projects. And I just want to note that we got all of these estimates from an independent consultant who had no other involvement with the project.
This project, having worked in public service for 22 years, by comparison, this project has had a lot of community input, a lot of public processing, and a lot of involvement. This is the Stakeholder Advisory Committee membership between year 2000 and 2007. You'll note that it includes people from other bureaus in the city. The involvement of the Planning Bureau has been consistent from day one. Next slide.
The Stakeholder Advisory Committee crafted this vision statement at the beginning of the community process that made that developed this project. And for those who in the audience who can't read this, it says that the vision statement is to humanize Burnside, and that Burnside will be Portland's most diverse and interesting street, known as a people place. It will be comfortable yet exciting, a place to walk, congregate, work, live, and visit, as a gateway to Portland's most dense neighborhoods and diverse and interesting districts and activities. There is safe access for pedestrians as well as vehicles. The Stakeholder Advisory Committee guiding principles were to recognize and enhance the diverse character of Burnside and Cooch, and there were a lot of neighborhood associations working together to make sure that this project honored that. Support and encourage a mix of business and other uses. Eliminate Burnside as a barrier, and recognize Burnside and Cooch as a multimodal corridor. The Stakeholder Advisory Committee, which convened in first in 1999-2000 and put in a lot of time looking at this problem, at the end of the day was just making a decision on the use of the right-of-way. And it's entirely an exercise in setting priorities and looking at trade-offs. We have a set amount of road, and you get to decide whether or not you want it to be a traffic lane or whether or not you want one fewer traffic lanes, and to put that towards parking or wider sidewalks or swales or a transit use or something else. And so it's a very complex sort of equation when you start to really throw all of these different uses in there. And the Stakeholder Advisory Committee, I think, did a great job with this community decision-making process.
And just to give you a sense, the issue of Burnside You know, is it a problem or not? Is it a problem that deserves some priority attention or not, or any attention at all? Evidence of that can be found in these district plans. These district plans were done prior to the first Burnside-Cooch couplet proposal, but the problem and asking the city to address the problem of Burnside show up in all of these neighborhood plans.
And this is in your supplemental material as well. I know that it's a little hard to read, but it pretty clearly outlines all of the issues. Each of the neighborhoods talk about the need to address Burnside, and we also got buy-in from each of the neighborhood associations. All the neighborhood associations abutting this have endorsed the project.
We did a lot of outreach beyond just the advisory committee, though. That's a list of the business partners, agency partners, and commissions and professional associations. Short history. The original Burnside-Cooch plan was adopted by unanimous vote of the council in 2002. But again, as I've already mentioned, coming on as transportation commissioner, listening to the concerns expressed by those that live in the brewery blocks, the Catholic Archdiocese, who I met with early on, and the Bureau of Planning, we went through an additional analysis for 15 months. And as you can see in that intervening time, we have fancy graphics on our PowerPoint. This is, we did town halls, mailings, posted feedback, asked for feedback on my blog, met with stakeholders. Roland and I personally walked up and down Burnside and Cooch the entire way, knocking on every door to get feedback face-to-face and to let make sure that folks along Burnside knew what was going on and what was being considered.
And this is also in your supplementary materials if you want to look more at the sort of meetings that were held. This is not a comprehensive list. These are just the main meetings. There were a lot of other smaller meetings going on as well. So when Sam decided to sort of slow up the process that had been endorsed by council in 2002, we undertook an alternatives analysis to try to really make sure that all of these questions that were being raised by new residents of the brewery blocks and the Bureau of Planning were really thoroughly looked at and addressed. And we did a very comprehensive and objective analysis. We had independent consultants come in to do this so that we weren't relying on staff from any particular city bureau. And there were four components. We looked at urban design, at transportation functions, the economics and the sort of cost benefit of the project, and also at the viability of a streetcar line. So we looked at about seven alternatives, but really it goes to 10 or 11 because we tried to mix and match different sections of these different projects as much as was possible to get a totally comprehensive look at an analysis of what was possible. We had an evaluation summary. This also is in your supplementary materials. We evaluated these projects objectively to see how they stacked up against one another. And this was not a sort of subjective sort of or qualitative look at things. This was a very hard-nosed look. And there's no guesswork to this. So we came up with a preferred alternative. And largely, this was what the Stakeholder Advisory Committee had come up with to begin with. So we basically were affirming the work that was done over the previous 6 years or so by the community. And we saw that there was one thing that might make the project a little bit better, and that's streetcar. So we had folks investigate that, and really, I just want to touch really quickly on the idea of a couplet, because I know that it's a scary term for a lot of people, because a lot of times couplets are designed to just move the traffic through. But this isn't like a standard couplet like MLK, Grand, Broadway, Widler. This is really an expansion of the downtown one-way street grid. And the entire downtown is a system of couplets, and this just sort of incorporates Burnside into that to sort of take away that hard edge and that barrier between neighborhoods. So now I just want to go through really quickly some of the actual qualities of this project. And so we're going to go up and down Burnside section by section so you can see what this project really does offer. Okay, so first we're going to start with Lower West Burnside. And this is one of the areas that is the most exciting because it is such a wide right-of-way that you really have a lot more room to play with. It gets more constrained as you go up Burnside. So you can see that really the main components of this are much wider sidewalks. We get to add on-street parking, swales, and other sort of pedestrian amenities, including curb extensions. We'll have signalized intersections on each intersection on both Burnside and Cooch. And we'll do a little zoom in so you can take another look. And really, this is, I think it largely speaks for itself. You have a bike path, which will be really state-of-the-art. You have more parking that doesn't exist there. All in all, we're talking about 200-plus more on-street parking spaces, which is something that's really desired by the retail in the area. And this is a sort of representation of what it would look like. And, of course, this is still only at the planning phase, so as we do more design, it's going to be refined. But one of the really interesting aspects of this is that the area that is used as, for parking, and we would be retaining all of the existing street trees in Lower Burnside, that was something that the stakeholder and neighborhood advisory groups were very explicit about. It can change into a festival street. And we think that for especially summer uses, that this is a great way to increase the amount of public gathering spaces, which was one of the things that Sam was really trying to do with this project. So, again, as I touched on before, this all comes down to what do you want to do with the right-of-way? Do you want to put it for you want to designate it for a lane of traffic, or do you want to put a street tree, or do you want to have wide sidewalks? You can't have it all, and it's all a bunch of trade-offs. But so if you look right now, you go from 12-foot sidewalks to 17-foot sidewalks. You also get a bike path that is separated from traffic. You get parking in what used to be two lanes, and a lot more room for swales and the Festival Street that we looked at a little bit before as well. So this is Cooch, and Cooch largely stays the same. It will go from a two-way street to a one-way street, but the sidewalks stay the same width. You have the same in terms of parking on both sides, and you have the same in terms of two lanes of traffic. The only difference is that we would have a streetcar in there, which would require you take a little bit from parking to have a wide enough lane for streetcar. So this is what Northwest 3rd and Cooch look like right now. And this is what it will look like after the proposed project. And also, one of the great things about Lower Burnside is that we really have a lot of opportunities for new gateways into the downtown area and new public spaces as well. So we'll just quickly show the first and potentially the most grand entranceway or gateway. When you're going off of the Burnside Bridge westbound, you will turn off onto 2nd to get to Cooch. It's a transition. But with that, you're able to put in new trees, have a very elaborate sort of pedestrian system with much wider sidewalks. And all in all, it becomes a much more pedestrian-friendly project. This is what it might look like. You don't need to have a globe, but it's a public art opportunity as well. So at the park block crossings, this is an area that is especially problematic for safety reasons, and we will be talking more about that later, but this is sort of what we have envisioned. Basically, you're able to, by splitting those by getting rid of two lanes of traffic and splitting the other two lanes that remain, you basically are able to get a new park block in there. And we have a little statue of Minerva. And here are some of the other gateway opportunities. With the much wider right-of-way that we have in Lower Burnside, we would be able to pull out the existing Chinatown gates so that they aren't tucked back onto 4th like they are right now, but they would actually be out and visible to everyone on Burnside. And you have all these other ones that we sort of touched on already. We'll go to Central Burnside and Cooch. Central Burnside, it gets to be more constrained, only 60 feet of right-of-way. But with the couplet, we're able to still add two lanes of parking by taking away the two lanes of traffic and widening sidewalks. Cooch, again, stays largely the same. It's going to have the same width sidewalks. It's just that it's going to go from being a two-way street to a one-way street. And here's our rendition of sort of what it would look like. We have streetcar in there. And this is what I am very excited about, I have to say personally. This is right out in front of Powell's Books on 10th and Burnside. What you are able to do with this project that you aren't able to do with a project that retains two-way traffic is to really reclaim what are called jug handles. And basically, the jug handle is what is making an island out of this public art right in front of Powell's. And it's when you take a left by taking a right. And we get the ability to reclaim a lot of these areas that exist on Burnside, because when you have one-way traffic, you can take left turns in both directions. And it really gives us the possibility to do some really exciting sort of urban parks or public plazas that would also be really ideal places to have these streetcar stop as well. So here's another sort of view of that. And you can see, I mean, I really want to point out just how much asphalt there is. But when we parse it down to two lanes of traffic, you get much wider sidewalks, and you get a lot of land for uses other than the automobile. So again, this is a cross section. You get to widen sidewalks again. And this is up at 15th and Burnside. And this is a really interesting intersection as well. So you'll see that there's the same sort of jug handle that we were talking about before that exists right here. And this is a huge area with four or five lanes. When you make it two-way and when you put the traffic up Cooch to sort of go back on to Burnside later, you get a lot more to play around with the right-of-way, which allows you to have much wider sidewalks and, again, reclaim some areas for public plazas that you don't have as an opportunity with any other project. And here's sort of what it would look like between 16th and 17th. This is in front of the Fireman's Memorial. We would be able to close off that area, and which this is Alder that's going off of Burnside. This is another plaza opportunity, which, again, you only get when you decide to take away lanes of traffic and put them towards other public uses. Here's another view. And another. Again, you gain parking where you wouldn't otherwise. So now we'll go up to Upper Burnside, which is the most constrained area on Burnside. This area, we won't be able to get any parking, but we are able to get modest improvements with the sidewalks to 9 feet from 8 feet. And there will be four lanes of traffic, just like there are now. So really, that section does not change nearly as much as other sections. Here is a sort of look at Upper Cooch. And again, you can see that there's not any real difference on Cooch with the amount of parking, the width of the sidewalks, or the width of the lanes. It's just that the traffic goes in one direction instead of two. This is at 20th and Burnside. It's a great opportunity for a public place. And there are a bunch of other project highlights that I think that Sam would like to touch on.
So one of the, always in these kinds of issues, you want to look at mitigation and the opportunities for mitigation. There have been concerns expressed early on in my review of this project by the Archdiocese regarding safety, noise, vibration, air quality, and operations between 15th and 19th. Streetcar and other transportation projects on the next slide do have a history of employing some of these mitigation tools, including sound insulation, rooftop air conditioning, bollards with chains in the furnishing zone, so it makes it more difficult for people to jaywalk, curb extensions, vibration dampening slabs can be used for the streetcar. And are used for the streetcar and other places along its line. In terms of the school itself, these could be employed in a number together or can be used in sort of various locations between 15th and 19th and in other parts of the project alignment as well. In terms of the streetcar, the notion of putting the streetcar, introducing the streetcar as part of this came from my shop, and it really grew out of the traffic analysis. A high percentage of the trips, car trips on Burnside, are for very short distance, and Burnside is used to a high percentage to get from the West Hills down into the downtown area, and then disperses, especially to the south. You'll hear more about that in a minute. We looked at a number of different alternative streetcar alignments to try to take some of the load off of Burnside. And ended up, based on the work from DKS and Associates, who's here, choosing the streetcar that goes on an alignment with a couplet. And they'll talk about how streetcars on a couplet are much less disruptive to car traffic than a streetcar on a two-way street, a single lane. Minimal impact to capacity. Again, the project that's being offered or the proposal that's being offered here can improve travel time between the river and Northwest while slowing traffic down. The streetcar is especially important part of this proposal, and it is a streetcar couplet proposal. Both inseparable is at least what I'm proposing. Because of the way that it enlivens the streetscape for pedestrians. Next slide. This is how it would fit in with the overall system that's currently on the books. We currently have a citywide rail planning strategy underway, and you'll hear more about that in just a minute, how it fits into that, and also the east side loop, streetcar and the streetcar currently in the research and development phase to Lake Oswego.
And I just want to add on to that, that this alignment provided the most transfers for other parts of the rail system. So you're really starting to get the dense transit network that makes for high ridership numbers and a successful system. So quickly, go to the peak oil part of this. After this was adopted by council, we decided that we should really take a look at what the impacts were, both in terms of fuel consumption and overall vehicle emissions, with some of the different projects that were being considered. I have just a couple of things that we pulled out from the task force recommendations. The city can play a catalytic role by setting a positive example.
The peak oil resolution was passed by council just a month or so ago.
Yeah. And we worked, just to be clear on this, we worked with independent consultants, but also worked closely with folks from the Office of Sustainable Development. And this is a process that the Office of Transportation has used for getting credits from the Climate Trust in the past. So it's a tried and true. So the peak oil report recommends that we reduce total oil and natural gas consumption by 50% over the next 25 years and charges city bureaus to set targets and shoot for them. And transportation, obviously, is a big part of the peak oil recommendations. And here are a couple of things that we think really pertain to this project to support land use patterns that reduce the need basically to drive, but promote walkability and easy access and other transportation options to ensure housing near transit stops that will support the use of transit and to build and maintain a street network that supports bicycle and pedestrian trips and provide pedestrian-friendly public spaces and other amenities near centers and other areas of compact development. Again, this is something else that I think related directly to us. Design infrastructure to promote transportation options and prevent infrastructure investments that would not be prudent given fuel shortages and higher prices. Invest in infrastructure that meets access and mobility needs with less fuel and continue to expand the light rail, streetcar, and bus systems. Encourage energy-efficient, renewable transportation choices. So do all that to just say really quickly that we looked at the existing conditions today, sort of what would happen if we didn't change anything and we just sort of let growth happen over the next 25 years, growth of, in the system. What would happen if we used if we went with the Burnside-only enhanced existing option that is being put on the table by some, and also if we did the couplet 10-19th. And we'll have folks talking a little bit more about the methodology behind this, but our findings were that compared with today, the enhanced existing option would entail about 60% more fuel consumption than the current configuration, and that the future couplet would only be about 2.5% more. But if you look at sort of the future no build and the growth that's there, you're actually reducing the overall fuel consumption compared with just leaving it alone. We also looked at the emissions to get a full sense of the carbon footprint. We looked at CO2, carbon monoxide, nitrogen oxides, and volatile oxygen compounds. And again, it's really the same pattern. You have much higher emissions for enhanced existing and much lower ones for the couplet. You also have some green street opportunities that you want to talk about, Sam?
So we're going to hear more about this later, but from the experts. But stormwater in this particular area is collected on 31 acres. We would be able to treat that in terms of green street. We'd be able to add 400 new trees. Some of those trees could be added at some of the places on enhanced existing, but this enhances the recommendation enhances the ability to do more new trees, and we are able to create 2.6 acres of new public space. You'll hear more about that in a minute.
Yeah. And again, this is it all comes down to the choices that we make with the right-of-way. What do you want to designate the roadway for? We'll also have some folks from the Office of Transportation talk a little bit more about the safety issue that exists on Burnside. You have both a really high crash rate for vehicles and for pedestrians. It's particularly bad for pedestrians. There are four of the different of the 10 worst intersections in the city that you can find on West Burnside.
And the four worst intersections right now are already signalized. We can do some additional things to try to make them more safe under enhanced conditions, or we will do them, working to do them immediately. But the basic design of the existing street is a huge challenge.
Yeah. And as we will touch on a little bit, part of the reason why there's such support for this in the pedestrian advocacy community is that they know that, you get the most dangerous streets by having traffic coming from two directions. It's when people tend to misjudge the traffic coming towards them, that it gets to be more dangerous. By reducing the amount of roadway that you have to cross and by making all the traffic come from one direction, we can really, really reduce pedestrian rates. And then also, Burnside has a very high concentration of high collision intersections. There are other intersections in the city that have more, but they're very densely concentrated along Burnside.
These are some of the enhancements to pedestrian safety that we're pursuing right now, and it's part of the package I've asked the City Council was good enough to fund last year, bless you, a package of safety improvements for pedestrians, and that would improve safety on 122nd, 82nd, and some of these immediate enhancements on West Burnside as well. Next slide.
Yep. We worked with the Portland Development Commission to sort of take a look at what we would expect in terms of economic benefit and overall redevelopment. And they found that we would be able to pay back the public investment part of this project. And this is the full $80 million, so street improvements plus the streetcar in 14 years. And this is the overall sort of taxes collected, and you would get up to $28 million in new taxes every year after year 20. And again, no one is saying that the couple it is necessary for economic growth, because as you can see, there's a baseline projection that we're looking at. But what we are saying, and what you'll hear today from a lot of the different property owners on Burnside, is that you get better development, and you get more development, and you get four-faced development where you wouldn't without the couplet and streetcar.
So the project benefits, we worked hard to meet both the project goals and vision of the neighborhoods to address the problems and also to meet the vision points that I put on the table after hearing from the public for both Burnside and Cooch. Next slide. Just quickly go through these.
And again, this is the community vision. Humanize Burnside, make it a people place, and provide safe access.
Thank you. We've got some invited testimony as well. So if we could have Alan Snook, Bill Scott, and Rick Gustafson come up to talk about issues related to carbon and transit.
I'll get another chair.
No, go
Alan, you want to go first?
Sure. My name is Alan Snook. I'm with DKS Associates. We've been working on the transportation analysis for this project. In addition to the traffic operations analysis that we conducted, we also evaluated the environmental effect related to emissions for the alternatives. This is also typically called the carbon footprint, or the footprint that an alternative would put on the environment. So I'd like to briefly go over the methodology and the results associated with that analysis. The methodology used the same traffic forecasts and traffic analysis models that were used under the traffic operations analysis. That really gave us an apples-to-apples comparison for the alternatives. The subareas within the overall study area were kept the same, been referred to as Lower Burnside, Central Burnside, and Upper Burnside. We supplemented the PM peak hour data because that's the analysis that is primarily done because the traffic volumes are heaviest in that time frame. We supplemented that with daily traffic volumes to get a profile over the entire day on the corridor in those three separate areas. And we also took that daily and extended it into an annual look across the corridor. The planning horizon was kept consistent with the prior analysis, which was 2025 for the future. We also did look at the existing conditions as well. So the four scenarios that we looked at this carbon footprint analysis was existing conditions, no build alternative, the enhanced existing alternative, and the extended couplet alternative. The carbon footprint analysis had two measures of effectiveness. One was the amount of annual fuel consumed in gallons, and the other is the amount of annual emissions in tons. The emissions looked at four components. They're related to carbon dioxide. This is related to the greenhouse gases and has the biggest impact to the global environment. But also took a look at three other elements, which is carbon monoxide, NOx, which is nitrogen oxide, and VOC, which is volatile oxygen components. All three of these elements have more localized impact and effect on the environment, primarily related to health issues, quality of life, and the local climate. However, these three elements can combine with other elements in the atmosphere and create carbon dioxide, which I mentioned earlier. Looking at the results, the existing conditions indicated that approximately 2 million gallons of gas is consumed annually within the study area. Now, in comparison, the no-build increased that fuel consumption by approximately 13%. The enhanced existing alternative increased the annual fuel consumed in comparison to the existing conditions by approximately 59%. And the extended couplet increased the annual fuel consumed by approximately 3%. Now, the differences in annual fuel consumed between the enhanced existing alternative and the extended couplet alternative are due to two primary things, one of those being the two-phase signal operations within the couplet area, the other being shorter pedestrian crossings.
What do you mean by two-phase? People won't know what that means.
The two-phase signal operations, if you imagine what the couplet is going to operate like, you have eastbound travel on Burnside that you can make a left turn from, and it does not prohibit or constrain the opposing traffic, which would be on Cooch Street. Under the enhanced existing operation, the enhanced existing alternative, if left turns are being made from Burnside, they're actually holding up the opposing volume of traffic and letting cars sit there and idle. The shorter pedestrian crossings in respect to that is the enhanced existing alternative does not really change the amount of distance a pedestrian needs to cross Burnside. The couplet alternative actually shortens that distance. When you shorten the distance, it actually allows you to have shorter pedestrian crossing times or side street green time to service those pedestrians. That side street green time is actually what's holding the main line, the most amount of traffic on Burnside today. So by shortening the pedestrian crossing, you're shortening that green time and shortening the effective time that cars would have to wait on Burnside, sitting there idling. Now, the emissions results are also based on the annual fuel consumed and therefore have the same relative percentages for increases over the existing conditions, with that being the enhanced existing having a higher impact than the extended couplet, and the extended couplet actually having less of an impact than the no-build. It's just a point of comparison. Homeowners emit approximately 15 metric tons of carbon dioxide. That's associated with both their cars, and that this is a typical two-car garage-type family, as well as their house. Now, in comparison, the existing conditions has about 11,000 households associated with it, as far as in a comparison of the 15 metric tons per household. Now, the future no-build increases that by about 1,450 houses. The future enhanced existing increases that by about 6,666 houses, while the future extended couplet increases it by about 283 houses. Thank you.
I I'm Bill Scott, General Manager of FlexCar in Portland, and I chaired the city's Peak Oil Task Force, which recently presented you with its report. The task force has completed its work, so I'm speaking here as an individual, but my remarks are intended to convey the spirit of the task force report and based on what I learned there. You adopted a resolution setting a goal of reducing oil and natural gas use in Portland by 50% by the year 2030, and the report and implicitly your resolution acknowledged that additional work must be done to quantify the impacts of various actions and investments on overall fossil fuel use. And specifically, Roland already called out the language in it that talked about directing the Office of Transportation to consider impacts of rising oil prices when deciding where to invest. Basically, what I'd like to do today is congratulate PDOT for beginning the process of quantifying impacts on fuel use and building consideration of energy conservation and carbon emissions into its criteria. I believe that the analysis requested by PDOT and presented by DKS today is a solid first step in moving toward a new paradigm in evaluating transportation system investments. The analysis shows a difference of roughly 1 million gallons of gasoline per year between the two most prominent alternatives. And for reference, that's roughly equal to the total of all gasoline consumption by the City of Portland government in a year. It looks to me like that's a big enough difference that it should be taken very seriously as you decide how to vote on this project. The calculations are largely based on differences in idling time between the two alternatives, and I guess I would just caution that it would also be important to consider which option is more consistent with a more sustainable energy future in terms of better supporting expansion of transit and a pedestrian-friendly environment. These could produce significant long-term effects on mode shift and trip generation. So I look forward to the development of evaluation tools that deal with those additional dimensions of fuel use as well as the idling time. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Bill. Rick?
Rick Gustafson, Executive Director of Portland Streetcar, Inc. The Board of Directors have designed, built, and operated the streetcar on behalf of the city since the original contract in 1996. We opened service in 2001. Recently, the board adopted a resolution supporting the Burnside Cooch couplet and the inclusion of streetcar in that couplet, and resolved to work with the city in helping and further in proposing this plan for the streetcar development along the corridor. my comments are directed toward more of the operational issues of streetcar. We operate streetcar primarily on couplets currently. We do have some operations on two-way streets on Harrison and Lovejoy. Generally, what we've experienced in the period is that our operations are far more consistent and more readily managed on a couplet system than they are on a two-way street system. A lot to do with signalization and then, of course, the same traffic impacts that we've already been referred to. So in terms of the operational issues, just for your information on a technical basis, the operation we've evaluated and worked with consultants and DKS and others with regard to the various alignments that were considered, and the board has adopted a resolution supporting it. The second is streetcar as a transit service and a component in an urban environment like this has proven to be beneficial and supportive of higher quality or higher level of development along the corridor, and probably supportive of the types of numbers they've discussed about the number of increased households and the number of total amount of economic activity. We've experienced on the existing streetcar corridor over $2.5 billion in investment in the period of time since the streetcar was announced in 1997, and over 7,000 new housing units have been developed along the corridor. This kind of improved economic activity has also resulted in a higher level of first floor retail activity along the corridor of 10th and 11th. So to that extent. Then finally, in the streetcar is electric service and is very compatible with a higher density environment and has worked well in these kinds of operations.
Sorry, next panel is on the issue of safety. Mark Lear from PDOT, Mick Servos, and Ludwin Rahman.
So just a point of order. I see a lot of parents with children. How many more panels before we get to public testimony?
We have a few.
Is there some way we can accommodate the families with children?
We'll get our panels done.
How many more panels?
We have a few.
Two?
No more than two. We've waited a long time to get here, Commissioner. Go ahead, Mark.
I'll keep this short. My name is Mark Lear. I work for the Portland Office of Transportation. I manage the Community School of Traffic Safety Partnership. I want to provide just a little background on the traffic safety conditions on West Burnside. There was a great article that came out on April 3rd in the Portland Tribune summarizing traffic crashes in the city, and since then we've gotten some questions about how that article relates to the conditions we have on West Burnside. And a part of that confusion is that we look at in the city are high crash locations for motor vehicles, and we also care a lot because of how great we've done in the city on making it safer for pedestrians, are high crash intersections for pedestrians. West Burnside has a fair number of motor vehicle crashes, but where it really stands out is its pedestrian crashes. There's no other area in the city that has anything comparable to the density of fatalities and serious pedestrian injuries as that section of Burnside from the river basically up to 23rd. Even though we have a lot of fatals and serious pedestrian injuries in corridors like 82nd and 122nd, there's nothing like this for a density. In fact, if you look at that 23-block section, which we did over a 10-year period, there's almost as many serious injuries and fatalities just on those 23 blocks as the whole rest of the downtown business district. So it's just an enormous area where we would like to improve traffic safety, bring down speeds, and reduce the severity of crashes. Thank you.
My name is Ludwin Rahman. I'm here representing the Willamette Pedestrian Coalition. I want to definitely second what Mark said about Burnside, West Burnside being the worst stretch of road anywhere in the city of Portland or in the Portland metro area from a pedestrian crash perspective. So as far as we're concerned, not doing something about pedestrian safety on Burnside is not an option. The Willamette Pedestrian Coalition has participated in the process for Burnside for the last 4 or 5 years, going on 6, I believe. We believe that on balance, the couplet does offer the most benefits from a pedestrian point of view. We understand that there are difficult trade-offs, and we have struggled with those ourselves within our board and our membership. But as I said, on balance, we believe the couplet offers the most benefit for pedestrians, both because of improvements to the sidewalks and especially the crossings on Burnside, combined with signalization on Cooch at a speed progression that is friendly to pedestrians, that isn't too fast, as well as with the bike lane on Flanders, and then improving or simplifying, clarifying the crossing of Cooch over I-405 altogether offer the most benefits to pedestrians. We found the project team to be very responsive to the concerns that we did have, like at the transitions at the intersection of 2nd Avenue where it goes from the bridge to the couplet.